Welcome back to the Explicit Measures Podcast with Tommy, Seth, and Mike. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the episodes.
Happy Tuesday, gentlemen. I was a little higher than normal, but it is a Tuesday, and you get a happy. So,
there we go. It should be a good day.
Always a good day.
Jumping into things today, we are continuing on our conversation around the implementation planning, particularly around the BI solution planning section of this article that has been written by Microsoft. We have been enjoying it. There's been a lot of things to unpack here and go through. It feels very relevant for building things around Power BI and Power BI content related things. So that'll be our main topic for today. But before we do that, we'll get into some introductions. Any kind of news or things across the internet? I know that the Power BI desktop has recently been released. So that's some news. I don't think there is a blog for that yet.
I think there was.
We know if that's out yet.
No, I think it's coming out today. But yeah, they're delayed on it.
Yeah, the desktop has been released, but the blog, associated blog article about what is going on, what are the elements, or what's changing, has not been released yet. So,
what's the big one in there that was part of a tweet? I think that we discuss in the future, but we didn't in that episode. The visual calculations.
Visual calculations has been officially released, which I think this should let the entire audience. And a hush fell over the entire audience because now your table's total row can just now equal the sum of the rows in the table. There's no crazy DAX and filter context you need to understand in order to make that work.
Yeah, that's
going to
be
a lot more to it, though.
What was that?
There's a lot more to than just getting your totals aligned.
I mean, that's part of it.
Right.
But you're right. There's a lot more. There's a lot of other things going on as well.
So I think that blog. Is that blog out on the
Microsoft blog?
Blog thing?
Where is it? Is it on the blog.powerbi.com or is it blog in Fabric?
Oh my gosh.
There's so many.
I'm checking real quick. But
okay.
Anyway, definitely something that's going to change, I think, the a lot of capabilities. It's really exciting. We probably will spend a long episode talking about just that thing, but I'm excited that it's out. I think that it adds a whole different layer of capabilities within the tool and potentially is either going to simplify things or create more confusion in some regards.
Create new problems.
We'll see. We'll dive into it. But anyway, I wanted to point that out in your one tweet that... That is, it's a big feature. It's a big change, and it'll be interesting to see how it resonates through the community.
I'm cautiously optimistic about the feature. I think it will be good. However, the area that I'm most cautious about in that feature is I'm just not confident that I like the idea of having things stored at the visual level, and you can't reuse them anywhere else. So it's going to be potentially more work on the individual visual. To make it, I guess, run correctly or run how you think it should run correctly. I don't know. We'll see what it does.
We'll see. We'll see. But it's, you know, I mean, at the same time, there are many cases where you're building a lot of specific measures for a visual, right?
That's true.
In the model. And boy,
in a thin report, potentially.
If I'm doing a lot of specific things just for with one visual, you know,
correct.
Just have it in the visual instead. I don't know. We'll see. I think it depends on discoverability and what it's going to look like.
I agree.
In the ecosystem of understanding what's going on in the report, because the troubleshooting part is going to be really important.
I lean more on Michael's side too, because we've had the discussion about even report level measures and like how hard that is to organize. Now we're down to the visual. Like, yeah, because it's going to be not part of your model, not going to be part of any third-party tool. I think it's going to be helpful for some situations. I'm trusting that they figured out everything with filter context and how everything's going to show up for measure totals and all that jazz. But yeah, I think from a prolonged point of view, it's probably not the best way to go. Or, I don't know. I'm intrigued to actually see it now out in the open.
And it needs to happen. How I can discover it, I think, is another question. I think that's a great point. Like, how will we discover what is it doing? Mm-hmm. And that's going to be with all things. It's a part of the ecosystem.
We're
with it now. Anyways, great new feature. Really excited about that one. We'll have to play with that more when we get it into Power BI Desktop and actually building some features. If you want to learn more about visual calculations, there's actually a number of really good videos. Go look for visual Power BI visual calculations on Google or YouTube. I believe Jerome has done a number of YouTube videos and sessions around from the Microsoft product team, who's done a bunch of just explaining what it is, how it works, some demos of it, what kind of formulas are there, what kind of equations are there. So that was all out there on the internet, and you can go look at it and observe it yourself. So go check it out, learn some new things. And with that, we can get into our main topic today. All right, Tommy, we are moving through our implementation planning section of the Microsoft documentation. Let's jump into solution planning. Tommy, give us kind of a heads up of where we're at in this and what are we talking about today?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. Some of this feels a bit like cheating. This is part 9 of our implementation Tuesdays. And this is a shorter article. We're doing steps 2, 3, and 4 on solution planning. We probably could have finished it today, but man, we got to do 10. We can't just end it. That would bug me forever. So we're at 9 straight.
It would bug me. Wait, it would bug you how long?
If we didn't do 10.
So let's wrap it up today.
Is no, what you're we're saying. Yeah. No, yeah. We're so close.
Yeah, I think we're done. This will be the last episode.
All right.
Be no problem after this one.
We're doing so good. Well, jeez.
Let's also switch the numbers around so that Tuesdays and Thursdays are a different numbers. Just two for Tommy.
That I'll never do again. I can't.
Anyway, we've spent a lot of time in this article series. It's not just one article. It's a whole lot of technical documentation.
And now we're finally getting near the tail end. We last Tuesday talked about getting the requirements and had our conversation there. Now we're kind of finally the action is the kinetic energy, our deployment, our proof of concept, and then validating our content. And you really think about everything we've done up until now, and man, do you go out of the gates running. It's all this wound up energy and planning and ideas. And we're stuffing right now into the last 3 steps, our deployment, validation, and solution.
I'd agree with those. So this is the solution planning section. And last time I think we kicked off, we didn't do a great job of explaining step 1, which was trying to get there, gathering requirements. We kind of talked, I think, a little bit about it. And actually, we talked a lot about gathering requirements just because I feel it was such a pain point to us. It's hard to deal with. It's hard to go through. We're on step 2 now, which is talking a little bit more around planning for development. So any kind of key areas or key insights here around planning for development? I think, Seth, you've got a lot of good thoughts around how to get a team equipped, you know, staged, ready to go, and plan for that development process.
Yeah, what's interesting is it's right. I was assuming that this part would be exactly the way Tommy like outlined it, right? Like, but this is like, here's all the things you do to get things in the development cycle. And I like this intro because it kind of made me do a mental like, hold on, hang on a second. Like when we're going to do planning for development, they're outlining kind of first time only roles and responsibilities of people or things or parts of infrastructure that you absolutely need to be aware of, right? And it also reminded me of kind of a lot of the parts of the article, which is kind of fell into this, man, this is a lot of time that we're taking from teams and doing these things. But a lot of it is first time, right? Like you get into this cycle of like, I understand that this is part of just what we're doing in the implementation. Kind of like this is all in a day's work kind of thing. We all know these things. The initial parts that they lay out here are the, you know, hold on, like, here's the parts of the things that you need to be implemented in or engaged in. So it kind of dovetails into areas as well as particular parts of the tooling, right? And mm-hmm. Kind of a slap in the face is like, how often are you guys building things straight out of the gate with compliance or security in mind? I mean, they're inborn in the tool, and it's nice that Microsoft kind of keeps me in the loop of like the bubble of safety, yeah. right?
Yep.
But when we do implement things, who has permissions? Who should see the different layers? Who has access? Like, all of those are really important to keep in mind. Compliance, as far as especially related to data, is called out, like personal identifying information, especially as you start to cross the boundaries of outside, you know, your area. United States is like ramping up, you know, on PII, and there are different states that have different rules, but it, like, in general, just like follow the what is that governance body, or the European Union, and like layout
GDPR.
You know, got to be aware of that, especially yep. as you're you know, crossing the bounds of the ocean. Data gateways, right? So a lot of this stuff works only on premises, unless you're in cloud. Yay, cloud. This is one of the best reasons to be in services, is not have to worry about gateways.
Yep, correct.
Workspaces, fundamentally, we've talked many, many times, but if you have confusion about how do you set up workspaces, especially in the Fabric ecosystem, to work effectively with this reporting solution, how you deploy, right? Dev and UAT, mm-hmm. all of this stuff is like the foundational aspects of, like, before you start launching stuff into the service, these are the key areas that you need to focus on. And then they like round it out by like support. I think that's innately whoever's creating this stuff has to support it.
Yep.
User training, which dovetails, I think, more into a lot of the conversations we've had related to developing reports that end users can consume easy, and that reduces the amount of training that you have to do around visualizations or the data sets. But ultimately, if people don't know how to use Power BI at first, or how to access the service, or what an app is, or where they can access that, there's a lot, I think, that has been or should be added into user training. Maybe Tommy can speak to this a lot because he does, but like, there's a lot of features that make consuming reports in a Microsoft ecosystem extremely easy. And it's valuable to spend time in there to say, hey, man, like, hey, people, this is really easy. Like, if you want to add this app in Teams because you live in Teams, it's very easy to consume your reports there, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
And then ultimately a governance piece, which I don't want to not talk about, but I think a lot of organizations may not have that piece of things like fully baked in yet, but ultimately our solutions need to align to those governance strategies. And there's a lot in the tooling, in the properties, in the setup, in, you know, the different certification levels, all of that, that have to follow any governance strategies that you have in place. So it's a good gut check, I think, before you get into the guts of like, hey, we figured out all the areas we want to develop, and like, let's get stuck into it without any forethought around the particular areas. So I really do like how they started out this section.
I feel like a lot of these areas here are things that are usually afterthoughts, especially if you're a young organization thinking about this, or if this is coming from the business side. IT may be thinking about this a bit more because they've had a bit more rigor around having the requirements to have compliance and security. But I think many organizations don't understand the ramifications of what workspaces do I use? Do I have a model workspace? Do I have a report workspace? How does that distribute? And I think a lot of these things, these characteristics, these different areas, they apply to many reports. Once you establish a lot of these criteria, like, this is how we're going to work with a gateway, this is how we will build a certified semantic model and associated reports, we're going to publish through an app. When you start aligning on some of those main key objectives, I don't think you need a lot of time on these things, but you do need a stance on them, on these elements. And I think companies have existing security policies or existing governance policies around how they want to handle data, but they've never been communicated to the business. And they're not refined in the lens of, how do I do this with Power BI? You may have governance policies about data, like, we don't export things, we don't send them via emails. That may be established, but how does that work in the context of Power BI? That's where I think things differ, because people are thinking about these elements, but not how does Power BI implement these types of solutions? And that's where I feel like a lot of companies fall short, is because they're not thinking about these things ahead of time. Tommy, you're nodding your head. You got some thoughts?
Yeah. I wonder, as I think about this in all the context of everything we talked about, would you think anything here that we're talking about, even though I'm assuming we're all considered thinking chronologically here, and we're going to do this step by step, do you see anything here that you would actually want to either move forward earlier on, at least getting the ball rolling, or more actually complete throughout all the stages we've done? I have a few thoughts, but before I get into an argument, I want to see what you guys think, because a lot of this, I really do feel we can do in parallel with our planning and our workshopping. Yes, we know that obviously we need to get the priorities, but they're still getting your ducks in a row, so to speak, from the technological side. There's still the base things that every organization is going to need, even if it's minimum. And those are usually pretty significant to me on, you know, getting our workspaces set up, making sure people know how to use the tooling, both from the consumer side from the developer side, the author side, the governance of making sure, do we know our metrics? I'm going through all of this and I'm trying to go through this. Like I said, if we had a roadmap and every episode that we've had was the next day, I really think a lot here when it comes to, especially the validation, how are we going to test, running into a few mistakes early on would be better earlier in our process and in our journey than now.
I'm not sure if you asked a question in there. Is there a question in that, or did you just say a lot of things?
So my thoughts here is I think we can do a lot earlier on. Do you see anything from the deployment? So
we've talked about a lot of things. What I would know anecdotally, I agree with the approach thus far. Are there some specific areas you want to discuss about whether or not we would agree in bringing them forward? I think let's start there, as opposed to, yeah, I would take this particular piece we just talked about and move it forward. I don't see that, I guess.
I think there's a difference between, like, I guess where I'm trying to get my head around this topic here is there is solution planning for a solution. Like, we're going to talk about the model, the KPIs, the group of reports that go off of a single semantic model. I'm looking at this and I'm thinking more holistically across the company, right? This is, to me, this is looking at like the center of excellence, the community of practice. These are general guidelines you're going to want to establish. I think a lot of these things apply to the entire organization or a broader spectrum than just one report or one semantic model. Like how you handle workspaces, who gets access to them, what does support look like? Who's going to own that? Basically assigning responsibility. I mean, there are some things I think that you do need to accelerate and do this earlier in your process, like user training. Users should know how to use PowerBI.com. Users should know how to use an app. Users should understand what a filter pane is versus having slicers on the page. I think there's a lot of very low-level hanging fruits here that organizations do not do that they should be doing in order to make their reports more effective or helping get people on board faster. Is that what you're kind of alluding to, Tommy? Or
yeah, I mean, because you go through all the things about the organizing the workspaces, the making sure the credentials, the gateways. I mean, that's what the highest level part here of the solution planning is. Man, wouldn't you want to get that rolling in the interim when we're still in the strategic? And the reason I say that is a lot of this stuff I'm seeing here is not like it's not going to get done, regardless of what solution project or initiative you're going to put in place. You're going to need some gateways, credentials set up, security.
I see where you're going with this now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'm going to argue, I like where it's placed in the order of things. I think you need to have strategic overview planning and tactical planning first, because those are your big objectives. Those are the main goals the organization needs to drive towards. This is now getting into the weeds. We're now getting into like, how do we make things happen? What are the settings we need to turn on or off? What are the policies we need to be able to handle you know, governance, workspaces, and apps. I think this stuff is, yes, you can definitely do this earlier at a high level, but in the context of the article, you can't do this stuff before you actually identify what your main goals are. I feel like the articles are organized the right way. I see what you're saying. Yes, these could happen in parallel, and maybe the decision makers you're talking about here are different than the ones we're talking about for strategic planning and tactical planning. But I think the way the article is written, this does make sense to me from a logical standpoint. Okay, rubber's ready to hit the road here. Let's make sure we plan to address these areas.
Really, you think the work from the workspaces to credentials, gateways, initial training, those things that couldn't be done any earlier?
No.
No. I mean, the reason, ultimately, the strategic and tactical are very, I would say, business side, right? The solution planning starts to dive into the technologies that we're going to use to implement those business needs. Like, we're figuring out, like, where do we want the organization to go from a data perspective?
Yeah.
And you're making these big buckets of, here's the things that are going to happen in these quarters. How do we define those? Those are OKRs. We're breaking that down into work type things. Are you in this point picking technologies like Fabric and Power BI is, you know, the solutions to what you're going to go implement, especially if this is first time, then part of your solution or part of the things that we're talking about are there's training. There's the technical aspects of ensuring that our organization is ready to adopt Power BI reports that are going to be start generating out of this planning and POC. It's the same thing that we've talked about before, though, is like, you're not going to just broad strokes blow Power BI out in the organization. Hopefully.
No way. Should not do that.
You're going to do exactly what is talked about in the solution planning. Like, hey, you have all these core concepts of things. We have a POC. So you can start with a particular area or a group of users. You're going to make sure that what you're developing from a training perspective meets their needs and et cetera, et cetera. And or figure out how it needs to adapt as you're telling them how to absorb reports, as well as figuring out who the SMEs are and integrating, I guess, on a deeper level to support them. So I guess to me, all of those are objectives, because an objective would be prep the organization for Power BI, and that's where I'm going to stick all my training things. And that is squarely in solution planning here, right? Because right before this, we did our tactical. So we're defining all the objectives that we need to cover, and the key results are supporting that. So my objective is Power BI is going to be the reporting solution. Nobody in our organization knows anything about it. We need to ramp them up so that in order to complete the objective, our organization and people know how to consume reports, where to get them, how to use them, and we're going to have some subject matter experts, and they have a path to getting into Tommy, who's going to manage all of that for me. So you're going to have a bunch of key results that are all training specific. And at the end of the day, you're going to put the big green check mark on the objective that we've covered that. And to me, this is exactly where that belongs.
Just, and like I said, we'll move on. And I'll say, I agree with you for the most part. I think the last thing I'll say, and then we'll move on, is I agree with, you're not going to get very far with a lot of this setup. And I think that's probably a more appropriate word. But there's a lot of, honestly, set up a lot of the behind the scenes work that you could at least get some foundation built, some structure built. And I'm just looking at looking at what they're saying, like, hey, make sure you have workspaces, make sure you have a gateway. Like, that's not going to drastically.
Yeah, you don't even know. Like, yes, you do, but who's controlling, like, so gateways, who's controlling it? What kind of data sources do you need? You can't identify where the data sources need to live, what data sources you want, until you've identified what data is important to you for reporting. So you're putting the cart before the horse in my mind. I think you need to have those high-level objectives and goals made first, because then we're going to go after sales data first. You can't do everything at once. I understand that you may want to do these things earlier, but I don't think you will be reworking. You will apply rework if you do this too early, after those main high goals. Now, once you identify those things, can you start these things later on? Yes, Should people know about how these things work? Yes. These things, training on these elements and making sure people understand how it works and how it's being built, you can do that as early as you want because they can understand it. Because there's an equivalent of, you know, you have to understand all these things before you really go out and build them. But am I going to go build a high concurrency gateway? No, I'm not going to build that until I know I actually need it.
Are you arguing for the conversation or the action?
Well, Mike, you actually bring up a very interesting point. We've done all this discovery, and yes, we're not going to build these complex models, but at what point in this process are we, honestly, like in a realistic point of view, are we really sitting down for a few days or hours and diving into what the data is like? At what point are we just taking everyone's word for how what the process is, where the data is coming in, and then that transition to, okay, now we're actually going to hightail it. We're going to set up everything. We have our goals. We have, let's look at the SQL database or whatever the database is. Is it even?
I think these are the next couple steps. I mean, it's talking about conducting a proof of concept. You've gone through, you've decided, here's the workspaces we need. Here's the gateways we want. This is how we're going to govern it. This is what we're going to do to build the models. Then you go build a POC, proof of concept. You go out, you go look at the database. Does it support what you want? Can you build some data model? Maybe it's not perfect, but you get it started. Like the, what you're describing to me is what's coming in the next step three and step four, which is actually doing some of the go get the data and things in there as well. I'm not doing that stuff before this at this point in my mind. I think you're running too fast into the process. It's just, that's how my opinion is.
No. And I think obviously you don't want to do anything, the cart before the horse, but I honestly, the biggest hindrance I'm having when I think about this is we're starting this now. And again, if you were actually really to do this at an organization with your team, with a department or with a client, this is many days, I don't know, like at least a month of getting to this point now. And that's, I think, my biggest thing where I would have a concern, where getting everyone to keep being involved, there's still no product. And now we're doing those beginning steps. But like I said,
So I'm going to push back a little bit.
All right.
I don't think throwing timeframes on this stuff is acceptable, or things you should be pushing out to people that scare people away from engaging here. No, it doesn't take a month. If you have an individual who is experienced in these areas and is a pusher in your organization and is 100% dedicated to solving this problem, things can happen very rapidly. Things can also happen very slowly because there are a lot of pieces to it. There's a lot of buy-in from the organization, from different parties and individuals. It entirely depends on the organization itself and how motivated it is to step down these strategies as far as how fast things can go. I've seen things accelerate extremely quickly because the organization is way ready to go and has given a lot of authority and power to individuals to wrangle the troops and go solve problems. And you can start to do that very quickly. Is there a lot of content in here? We've taken 9 episodes so far to talk about it. Yes, there's a lot of content. There's a lot of things that you should be aware of to add to your strategy, to adapt to your organization, because all of this is variable. They've done a really good job across the board of keeping, I think, this documentation to the things that matter, right? That have tripped up organizations, tripped up us. We've gotten stuck in the rut of talking about some of these things. But I would not start throwing like, oh, this is the largest, biggest effort your organization's ever going to take on. But like in the same ways that we start thinking about high level, how do we take action? We are on the high level. Somebody needs to define what the roadmap is across the board for where you want to achieve things by the end of a year. Those are big things. You do that through the OKR framework, which creates those high level things and makes them actionable and measurable. And now we're in solution planning. Everything you're bringing up in my mind is solutions to objectives that solve the bigger problems. You can take these one at a time. You can take them two at a time. Like a big chunk area may take you 6 months to complete, because that big chunk area is you know, several quarters of objectives, the entire first quarter could be like setup of the infrastructure, development of training, development of processes, development of all these things, quick wins and reports, like all of these objectives that are going to happen, but you're still moving the needle. It's not like this is some monolithic thing that you need to interject all of this first technical training stuff into strategic or tactical planning. Like, it doesn't belong there. These are parts of the solution, in my mind, that you're outlining that get me from point A to point B. And you can do those incrementally. You can do these pieces in like the way that makes the fastest impact. And then as you go along, you're going to slow things down as you, you know, start to implement all these pieces that are going to round out all of the framework that you're trying to accomplish. But I don't think interjecting the training or like technical parts of this have anything to do with solution or tactical planning. I think they're squarely right here where we belong. And to Mike's point, we're going to talk about all the other areas that are specific to, I think, what you're trying to push further upstream, which I just doesn't make sense to me.
I think this is going to, I think I also agree, Seth, with your sentiment here as well. This is going to vary widely between organizations. Some organizations are going to be very resistant to this, and they're used to using their old tools. They've got Qlik. That's how they've been operating for years. That just means
you have a different part, a different objective.
Correct.
Yes. In here, right?
Yeah.
You need to transition from one tool to another. And what does that look like, and how do we achieve that?
And that may take longer based on how much you've built in the old tool to where you're trying to get to in the new tool. So again, it's a lot of that. You know, again, this is why I think this article is great, is because that really plays into what happened in strategic and tactical planning, right? Hopefully you're not trying to lift the entire old solution over all at once. You're picking out, okay, what are the most important things we care about? What are the key reports that we look at every day? Let's focus on those first. And then we can have this solution planning where we go in and now we start. And I like this section on planning for development. I think those were a lot of great points, but I think really, to me, the really value in this section here is doing the proof of concept, getting someone in and starting to build out what, like making things happen. You know, this is where you start looking, Tommy, to your point, this is where you start looking at the source data. You demonstrate you can get the volume of data you need into a report. You build out the environment. Hey, let's test this. Let's put everyone in a workspace. Does that work for our organization? How are we going to share this? Oh, by the way, I don't want people modifying this data model. Okay, great. We need to, that's not going to work. So this is where we do a lot of like the initial build of the environment, the proof of concept. How are we going to deploy things? Do we need dev test prod? Do we need more than that? Do we need less than that? Can we just do dev prod? These are those steps where you have those conversations and you start putting these out and start figuring out, okay, does this solution work for us or not? And I think I really like this next step here, step three, around conducting that proof of concept. I think this is immensely valuable.
I think one of the big things, and I'm trying to see whether or not there's, it referenced later on, but I don't think so, is to Tommy's point, in the POC, I think the, and call it whatever you will, some organizations hate the term POC. And
true.
There are two cautions I would have, and it actually, I think, outlines in the red, and I 100% agree with it, is when you put something from a technical solution perspective out the door, it is very hard to tell people that it's not production.
Final deal.
Business doesn't care.
Yeah.
You produced a report. A POC in the business realms very quickly becomes production all the time. And that's why, like, you can be as clear as you want, but maybe the POC is not to a wider body of people. Maybe it's only the people that know it's a POC and are going to help you build the production thing. Either way, or your POC is version one and it is production-ish ready and you're just going to bury a bunch of tech debt to build it up to production. But that's the danger of POCs. Like, it is the fact that nobody cares if it's producing good data or 95% right, and they're accepting the margin of error because we're still saying it's a POC. If they're getting business value out of it, they're going to continue to use it. The other caution I would have in here, and it'll be interesting, Well, let me table. What are your thoughts on that?
I like your thoughts on this one. And I think I've run into organizations that have this same problem. POCs turn into production too fast. Just ship it. There's not enough rigor around testing the data that the quality is there. And I feel like an opportunity here is to use some of the deployment pipeline pieces. So you can build what you want to build in dev. You can roll it to test. You can give metered control to reports coming out of that test environment, which is great because you can have the workspace named test environment, prototypes only. Like, you know, you can kind of be a bit more specific about that. But the idea here is part of your planning earlier on should be this report will live in this area until someone approves it. Once it's approved, your access is removed and the final report gets moved to production. So I think by adding a bit more process or rigor around actually using the test environment for doing real testing, you have the ability, and you really, I mean, to your point, Seth, right? There needs to be a clear mindset around, we will deploy something. I will let you look at it. This is early previews. And when you're done, you need to come back to us. We will. This is where the program management kind of comes into this a little bit as well. I'm going to reach back out to that user and say, okay, you've had a week with the report. Did this meet your needs? Have you got things done? Because your access is being removed and we're going to move that same report over to production now. If there's any changes, we need to go back to development and fix those and move it forward before we go out. But I think using part of that deployment pipeline helps with some of these expectations around things that may be proof of concepts. That's my opinion.
And it does. And I think a lot of my experience and my view or lens into viewing this is predominantly production data.
Yeah. Okay. Yes.
Because the vast majority of time we are playing in production realms or production realms only. It's at least in my experience, it's not often you have full environments of data that are ready or usable for like reporting tools or backend structures, especially when you get into like the big data. Not to say that some organizations don't have full environments and it's great. It's easier to control a POC when it's not in production. Whereas I think my comments are around, if you're using prod data and there's value, you know, careful.
Could get stuck there. Yeah, I agree.
The other strong point I want to make here is the POC is a proof of concept, right? We're taking a lot of tactical things that are already kind of time bucketed, right? And we're saying, hey, we're going to have this done in this time frame. But to Tommy's point, this is data. And we know data, and it's rife with issues. Could be the source system, it could be the complexity, it could be a migration from one system to another, it could be any number of things. And the POC, I think, is the first place where you're getting stuck into that element of like, okay, well, we need to make this work. We're going to do a bunch of discovery around these activities to understand all of the things we don't understand. And once we do understand, oh my, either like we're in line with the expected business outcomes or we're not. And I think this is where you have the we're not conversation, right? Where, okay, we've got a problem or problems to solve that we, you'll notice are huge gaps in our proof of concept. In order to solve them, it doesn't mean that our, well, in order to solve them, we have two options as an organization, right? In order to hit the timeline, we need X more bodies, right? Or essentially the capacity that we now know is required to go solve these things, and we need to either disrupt somebody else's workflow and fix a data source.
Yes.
Or we need to accelerate the team somehow. And that means, you know, maybe repurposing priorities. It means whatever, whatever. Or you extend the timeline on this particular area of the project thing, et cetera. And now you're talking about the other thing that business doesn't want, which is, no, we said in our box as we're doing strategic and tactical planning that this was going to be done in Q1. And that's the fun conversation that should come out of the POC.
This is a common problem where you have timelines. And when things get delivered, either throw more people at the process, and even, and again, I'll even argue sometimes throwing more people at something doesn't get it done faster because it's bottlenecked to one person. So sometimes you actually need to have like
POCs are generally like, hey, we're not 3/4 of the way through. Yeah. If we throw more bodies, even though we're 6 months into this project, we're going to get it done. That is not the case at all. It's a lot of accrued knowledge, right? Of all of these individuals pushing towards a direction. And there's a fallacy in there, right? Like there's a phrase I know that is used where people think that you can just interject more bodies and then like accelerate the timeline.
Okay. Agree. But this is the challenging part. I mean, the bigger the project, and almost every time I've done one of these things or rolled something out, there's always data quality problems somewhere because sometimes you don't even know they exist until you actually get the data into a place where, oh, I can actually see the data now for once. I can actually really look at the details of the information. Oh, I never knew that was there. And again, this is where hundreds of millions of rows, one user can't go through and verify that all 100 million rows are right. It's just too much. So you have to do some level of aggregation and get to a point where you have better tooling that can actually illuminate where there are challenges. So yeah, this is going to be an ebb and flow thing. It's going to really determine how much effort the organization is willing to put behind it. What are your thoughts, Tommy?
I'm going to pause here because I think we're actually making good progress in the conversation. Let me think about this so I can actually put in a better idea because I already diverted us enough. So
sweet. Moving on.
All right, great.
We've conducted our POC and now we're going to create and test content.
Create and validate, right?
Create and validate content. Yes. The POC is successful. The project team shifts from POC to creating and validating content.
This is great though. I like the diagram that's being presented here. So the development and validation lifecycle, I think makes total sense. You know, communicate, there's going to be a release, centralize the feedback, monitor the solution, see how people are using it. This is something that I think people miss a lot. Respond and follow up with feedback, why things were broken, how we're going to do things. Review or advise your solution, develop again, and kick it back to the beginning. So like this I like. I like the feedback loop. Oh man, coming from a mechanical engineering standpoint, there's this thing called the PID loop. I don't even know what the acronym stands for, but it's a feedback loop, right? You can't build something and not get feedback to improve the solution. You can't just get a great solution initially. So getting something out there and letting people react to it, super helpful. And you kind of learn, like, was I even answering the right kind of questions? Do people understand how to use the report? Where are we missing things? And this is a great development life cycle that helps you refine the usefulness of a report. I think this is great.
I agree. And I don't think this also has to be confined to test realms, right? Like this is going to be dependent on what your solution is that you're building. Like this, you could plug this into the development of training. You could plug this into the development of, you know, first big major report. The important parts in here, I think, are it's iterative. If you're adding iterative business value, this will always be a success. And you're also creating, to your point, Mike, this feedback loop where it, especially as centralized efforts that are engaging either across the business or with particular business units, allowing yourself to adapt and change to all of the different criteria that you know are going to come in from data projects. So I think this also like puts in guardrails around ensuring that you're making progress and like issues that are brought up or found are addressed and put, you know, into spectrums of achievable, you know, areas. But ultimately what I found is like there's kind of still a mix between agile and waterfall as far as like things that you're developing and actually pushing out the door, but
scrummer fall
around, but ultimately like that development cycle of like just continual improvement. And Microsoft's a great example of this with Power BI or Fabric, right? We may hate it, but like, it's not like they're not shoving stuff out into production as the features are there instead of, you know, the way it used to work with old SQL Server, it'd be a quarter or a half a year before you get a brand new download of things. So by
teaching people that, like, hey, there's this cycle of feature development that's happening here, is, I think, adds the value. But also one key in here is it's really important to open and create those communication channels where the audience, whether that's a business group or the organization itself, understands when updates happen, like what to look for, mm-hmm. or not, you know, you can't just keep shoveling stuff out and not tell people what you're enhancing.
That's a true statement there. Tommy, what do you think? What are your thoughts on this?
See, this is what I love. And I think in order for the excitement, because there's a big part we have to play where we're balancing, I think, I don't want to say people's emotions, but you know, you're balancing that excitement too and getting everyone involved. There's been a lot of technical. So I love this part because all this is now new features. And hey, we're working on this now. And if you've properly planned the things that you're actually coming out with, the things that you're doing behind closed doors are going to make a significant impact. Even if it's the low hanging fruit, but there's that high margin effort where it's like, we have a report now and you've never had a report, or guess what? It also refreshes once a day. Even to the little things of just how people can interact with their data or just have better access. So this, I think this was from Melissa Coates. She had that diagram about the kind of the cyclical cycle, celebrate your wins. And I think a big thing we have to do is that part marketing right now too, is we're making these minor incremental updates, and some of them will mean more to users than we think. And we need to have that communication on, guess what you can do now, guess what's coming. I think that's a huge part that goes honestly understated.
A lot of this section around the proof, the creating and validating content, I feel like a lot of this is expectation management. You know, from the report creator side, I'm trying to manage your expectations around what you're going to get. And then from the report consumer side, you're helping them understand this is what this report is capable of. And I think when there's a large disconnect between the report consumers of what they expect the report to do and what the report developer did to make the report, when that gap is large, that's where you see friction. So I feel like a lot of this proof of concept stage is helping align both sides of that team, so that way everyone's on the same playing field. And some of the other parts here that are in the article as well, it talks later on talking about when you're validating the content, you're like, you want to encourage user feedback. Tell me how you're using it. Show me what you're doing. And then you want to isolate larger requests, because there's potentially, again, this is what I find, most users can't articulate what they want until they see it. I have to give you something first, and then I can react to it.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying completely. Like, BI developers, people developing reports, can't just assume that launching things into the service and sharing them is when the job is over.
Correct.
Because ultimately what we want to do is change business process behavior. We want people to engage with our reports.
Yep.
And in order for those reports to be meaningful, you need to make them meaningful. Like, you need to show people what the value is or what problem it's solving in their work stream that they may not be aware of, right? So it's that not only communicating what is out there, but engaging with them and training them on how to use it if needed, but also encourage them to provide feedback in that loop where maybe you're enhancing the report, maybe, you know, like there are improvements or additional views or insights that can be generated, and those get put into the backlog for the next cycle.
What are your thoughts on, and even verging, moving on here to step five, potentially a little bit, there's this concept of deploy, support, and monitor. If I look at those three elements, when you see organizations utilizing these three areas, what do you feel like they're best in, and where do you feel like they're weakest in? Either deploy, supporting, and monitoring. Do you have any
right
feelings?
Out of the gate?
Yeah, just kind of what do you think?
I mean, I think most organizations are good at deploying things.
I would agree.
Firing them out there.
Yep. Here's it is out the door. And I think especially with when it comes to Power BI, support is probably higher ranked than monitoring. Mm-hmm. I almost think most organizations have no clue how to monitor what's going on in their environment.
I would agree with that. I think that that's not just a BI thing. I think that in general, most organizations know how to deploy and support. The problem is when you get into situations where what you deployed are causing issues.
Okay.
You have a bunch of people with like the support issues increase, which require more people to triage the support issues, and you can't understand what the actual source of the problem is. Unless either you're so far down the road that you can create these massive buckets of support issues, right? That lead you to point towards potential problems.
Yep.
But with monitoring, you proactively can get in front of some of those before you have all the the issues that are being generated. And I think that's the value and why in many cases we're huge proponents of ensuring you have proper monitoring as part of the solution up front, because you need to have you want to have an idea of potential conflicts or issues that are arising in an ecosystem that is especially as far reaching as the capacities of Power BI or, you know, the Power BI service, right? You have a lot of players in this ecosystem, and any one of those could cause issues.
That's a good point. What do you think, Tommy? Deploy, support, or monitor? Which one's easiest to do? Which one's hardest to do?
We do more in the deploy, but I think it's absolutely harder. Just because we get a lot done, it feels easier. But are you really going to rank that on all the technical debt that it incurs? Yeah, we're great at getting things out the door because most of the time, too, nobody knows what it's supposed to look like because it's tech and we're the only ones who know. It's easier for us to deploy because there's not as many things in our way. Other people, it's like no one else is going to know how this works. So we kind of have a straight shot. But when you really think about a good solution, the deployment goes well, so you don't have to go back as much. We're always going to have the validation, but if we're going head first, I think they're kind of always correlated in most cases. What we give the least amount of time to is that support and monitoring. And I love that we've talked about that a ton on our episodes dedicated to that. We're always so focused on that release, so we can close this project or, close this.
It's easy to check that box. Hey, I was going to deliver 3 reports. Mm-hmm. Here's the deployed 3 reports. Done. Next thing, it's harder to say, well, now we're going to support it. Here's how many tickets we get through. Here's how we're monitoring it. I think that's a little bit more, it's planning, it's required, but it's not as easy to check a box, I think.
1000%.
Well, you've done it again. We've burned through pretty much a good hour of just talking content around the solution and BI planning. So this is our 9th episode kind of around talking around what this solution planning looks like. I think it's a great article yet again. Go read it. The link is in the description below this video. It's also in the chat window as well, what we're talking about today. So make sure you go hit that link, read through the article, and just see how this fits for your organization. I think that's really well. Let's do final thoughts here. Tommy, final thoughts for the next 3 sections, step 3, I think it's 2, 3, 4, and 5 here. Maybe that's the 4 sections. I don't know. Anyways, what are some of your final thoughts here on these solution and planning pieces?
I think we can do a good job as we look forward to what does that type of program or really schedule look like in real life in terms of encouraging others, getting feedback. Like, how do you know you're actually doing that successfully? Because that is the most, in a sense, subjective compared to did you create that report, but that we're putting enough time and we're getting enough value out of getting users feedback, being able to get enough information. So if we do need to pivot or we do need to change our goals, that we're not going to lose that or be out of sight of that. So that's where I hope we go in our next conversation.
Seth, any kind of final thoughts for you as you review or reflect back on these next couple sections?
I think ultimately, whether it's these three sections or the entire conversation across these things, like, just it's important to get the full picture, understand the pieces that you were not aware of, and align them to which areas in the business are going to make the largest impact, and start down these paths. You can iterate across a solution. You can iterate across objectives. You can, you know, all of these things are things that you can make progress on. Big picture, know where you're going though, right? So whether it's the solution or the strategy, just get started.
I think if you look at this article, particularly in solution planning, I think this will look very overwhelming to a business unit just trying to get out a couple reports and help their team. So what I would say then, in my perspective here on this, is what you're looking at in this documentation is more of a central team trying to serve a large number of larger reports and models to a broader part of the organization. So to me, this feels a lot like certified things, certified data sets, certified reports. I think you can do this in a quicker, faster standpoint if you're looking at a single business unit. Every single business unit and every single report that comes out doesn't necessarily need to go through all these steps. So I think there's a potential of thinking about, does this content live in our central BI team, or is this something that's a bit more self-governed or self-managed? And then you can, yes, be mindful of this, but then allows you to kind of step back and take a little bit less of that main exercise through everything there. Anyways, trying to figure out how to balance this between, like, I want to do everything, but then I need to get stuff out the door too. So there's a balancing act on this article as well. With that, thank you very much. We appreciate your ears. You've listened to us for an hour talk and ramble about Power BI. Thank you very much. We appreciate your time. And our only ask is, if you like this content, if you like this article, please go share it. This is a great article. I'd recommend you go share it with your colleagues, your coworkers, and hopefully you're working through these things as well. With that, Tommy, where else can you find the podcast?
You can find us anywhere there are podcasts, and Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. Make sure to subscribe and leave a rating. It helps us out a ton. If you have a question, idea, or topic that you want us to talk about in a future episode, leave your name and a great question. Head over to powerbi.tips/podcast. Finally, join us live every Tuesday and Thursday, 7:30 a.m. Central, and join the conversation on all Power BI Tips social media channels.
Excellent. With that, thank you for your time, and we'll see you next time.